Welcome to The Patriot, 1776. Hi, this is John Mady, and I am the pastor of Victory Baptist Church in North Fort Myers, Florida. And who is the Patriot of 1776? You are, and I am, and so is everyone who loves America and wants to follow the principles of our founding fathers. The last sentence of the Declaration of Independence reads like this: "And for the support of this declaration, with a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor." If it had not been for the Patriots of 1776, we would still be paying taxes to England and drinking. We're going to finish up the ACLU. And so let's start with this article, the ACLU's Communist Atheistic Roots. And this is an article dated December the 16th of 2010, and it's written by Paul Kengor. And then after we read this, then we're going to go on to another book, another reading, and this is concerning Saul Alinsky. If you not have heard of this name, you will appreciate very much knowing about him. And this is where you hear the community organizer, and he wrote a book. It's called Rules for Radicals, and he's another communist. And so let's get started on the ACLU, and then we'll go to Rules for Radicals. All right. Quote, "The ACLU seems unusually active right now. What gives? Maybe it's the Christmas season, which always seems to spring the ACLU into high gear, making it more miserable than usual. I tried to ignore the latest round of ACLU legal challenges against religious Americans, but they become too much. The surge has been remarkably ecumenical, not singling out Protestants or Catholic interests. First, I got an email from Matt Staver's group, Liberty Council, highlighting a bunch of ACLU lawsuits. Then I read a page one, top of the folder headline, in the National Catholic Register, 'Catholic Hospitals Under New Attack by ACLU,' regarding an ACLU request to compel Catholic hospitals to do abortions. Next was an email from a colleague at Coral Ridge Ministries, forwarding a Washington Times article. Then came another email from yet another Christian group on lawsuits somewhere in Florida, and on and on. That was just a sampling of this year's Christmas cheer, courtesy of the American Civil Liberties Union. At least the ACLU has always finds a way to unite Protestants and Catholics. In the interest of faith and charity, I'd like to add my own ecumenical offering. A history lesson. It concerns some fascinating material I recently published on the ACLU's early founders, especially three core figures: Roger Baldwin, Harry Ward, and Corliss Lamont. I can only provide a snapshot here, but you'll get the picture. First, Roger Baldwin. Baldwin was the founder of the ACLU so far to the left that he was hounded by the Justice Department of the Progressive's progressive, Woodrow Wilson. Perhaps it was a faith thing. Wilson was a progressive, but he was also a devout Christian, and Roger Baldwin was anything but that." Unquote. I just wanted to make a comment here. You can't be a progressive and still be a Christian. There might be a Christian who would be a progressive, but it's doubtful. I cannot think that someone who is a Christian, who has God's Holy Spirit in them, would reach down in their heart to do things like the progressives do. And we'll read more about progressives. We'll have a study on progressives to show. Woodrow Wilson was a progressive. For this man to say that he was also a Christian, that really, if I see Woodrow Wilson in heaven, that will be a surprise to me. All right, well, here I am. You're going to say, well, who are you to judge? I'm nobody. God is going to judge him. But I can be a fruit inspector. And that's exactly it. I'm inspecting the fruit that Woodrow Wilson put out. And I'm inspecting the fruit that Roger Baldwin is putting out. All right, let's go on. Quote, Baldwin was an atheist. He was also a one-time communist who, among other ignoble gestures, wrote a horrible 1928 book called Liberty Under the Soviets. Notably, he was smart enough not to join Communist Party USA. Other early officials of the ACLU, which was founded almost exactly the same time as the American Communist Party, included major party members like William Z. Foster, Elizabeth Gurley Flynn, and Louis Bunez, who later broke with the party. Communists used the ACLU to deflect questions from the U.S. government over whether they were loyal to the USSR and were serving Joe Stalin in some capacity and were committed to the overthrow of the American system. That whole overthrow the government thing is something our universities tell us is baloney, a bunch of anti-communist McCarthyite tripe. In fact, it took me mere minutes of digging into the Comintern archives on CPU, well, let's just say the Communist Party USA, to find actual flyers and formal proclamations from the American Communist Party publicly advocating precisely that objective. Click here to view some of the documents. So you can, if you have this article on your computer, you can click to some of the documents that the communists were using. I also found the ACLU riff throughout these archives. So bad has been the ACLU in aiding and abetting American communists that various legislative communities, federal and state, considered whether it was a communist front. The 1943 California Senate Fact-Finding Committee on Un-American Activities reported that the ACLU may be definitely classified as a communist front. The committee added that at least 90% of the ACLU's efforts are expended on behalf of communists who come into conflict with the law. That 90% figure was consistent with a major report produced by Congress a decade earlier, January the 17th, 1931. Note the consistency. Defending communists secretly committed to Stalin's Russia has been a central component of the ACLU's work since its inception. In my research, I also found constant approving references to the ACLU in Communist Party USA's flagship publication, The Daily Worker. The Daily Worker loved the ACLU. Moreover, I was struck by how early the ACLU had been challenging not just Christians, but their most joyous holiday with the Daily Worker's eager approval. To cite just one example, Christmas 1946, one of the first for returning troops from World War II, and the ACLU initiated legal action to stop the singing of Christmas carols in California public schools. For that, the communists were most grateful to Baldwin and the boys. Aside from Roger Baldwin, there were two other especially influential figures comprising this not-so-holy ACLU trinity. They were Corliss Lamont and Henry F. Ward. Covering these two adequately here is impossible. I've devoted probably about 10,000 words to Lamont alone in my book, Dupes. Both men were precisely that, dupes. The ways in which Lamont and Ward were rolled by communists is astounding, with Lamont granted a special Potemkin village tour of the USSR in 1932, guided by Soviet handlers, where he swallowed the most outrageous propaganda hook, line, and sinker. Lamont was most inspired by the Bolsheviks. Militant atheism, especially the churches they converted into the wicked atheist museums. Lamont had already written his atheist classic, The Illusion of Immorality, which had been his dissertation at Columbia University under John Dewey, godfather to American public education, who himself had made a Potemkin village tour of USSR in 1928. Given his leftist atheism, Lamont was at home with the ACLU. Harry Ward, however, was a Methodist minister and a professor at Union Theological Seminary. How could he possibly support the ACLU? That's what made Harry Ward an even bigger dupe. More than supporting the ACLU, Ward was chairman, as Baldwin served as director. Imagine, a Christian was a founder of the ACLU. That's Harry Ward, unquote. Again, I would just like to put in a little penny or two here, saying that I can't see how a Christian can be tricked and fooled. God's Word tells us about being deceived. And maybe that's the answer here. But my question is, it also tells us, by their fruits ye shall know them. And there's no fruit in having Christians to become communists and go the direction, in that direction. So I just wonder about these people that call themselves Christians and then go into the Democrat Party or into the Communist Party. All right, let's go on. When it came to sheer manipulation by communists, Ward was arguably the single greatest dupe in the entire history of the American religious left. Tellingly, a major congressional report, July 1953, on communist activities in the New York City area featured more references to Ward than any other figure, twice as many as the most cited figure, Earl Browder, a lifetime face of American communism. I found documents in the Soviet archives where communist officials in Moscow and New York deliberately targeted Ward to help push their propaganda. In one, a December 1920 letter, Ward is listed by Comintern officials as a source to get their materials on the shelves at the seminary library. It wasn't atheistic communism that concerned the Reverend Ward. No, it was anti-communism. Writing in a Protestant Digest in January 1940, long before Senator McCarthy arrived on the scene, Ward admonished the faithful of the perils of anti-communism, which was being employed under the leadership of Congressman Martin Dees in a new Red Hunt, one more ruthless than that of former Attorney General Mitchell Palmer. Both Dees and Palmer were Democrats. Alas, Christian charity compels me to concede a key fact, particularly at Christmas time. Among this not-so-holy trinity of Baldwin, Lamont, Ward, there was a measure of redemption for Baldwin, at least. Baldwin eventually, after the Red Terror, after the Great Purge, after the Ukrainian famine, after the Hitler-Stalin Pact, after millions of rotting corpses, after the Gulag, after the communists had violated every imaginable civil liberty, awakened to the stench of the Soviet system. He finally saw communism and communists as a genuine concern. By the early 1950s, Baldwin began insisting that ACLU officials take a non-communist oath. Call Baldwin crazy, but he figured that any ACLU member who held allegiance to totalitarian dictatorship was not truly serious about civil liberties. Perhaps they were publicly exploiting American civil liberties to privately support a nation, the USSR, that had no civil liberties. Good thought. Who could argue with that? Well, Corliss Lamont could, as could I.F. Stone, who was the latest evidence suggests that an actual Soviet agent. So that's something that we need to be aware of and watch what people do. You don't go by what people say, you have to go by what people do. Several editors at The Nation, several professors from Columbia, the New York Times, and other usual suspects, finding a purge they could finally condemn, they objected to this ACLU purge. Lamont resigned. So yes, Roger Baldwin's ACLU backed away from its communist leanings. Sadly, however, Roger Baldwin's ACLU never seems to have shirked from its atheistic leanings, which haunt us still today. Could it be that the ACLU's alleged one-time commitment to defending communism has shifted to an apparent commitment to defending atheism? It certainly seems like it, especially this time of the year. And if the ACLU doesn't like that perception, it should do something to change it. What do you think? And so, here is something about the ACLU that perhaps many of you didn't know. They claim to protect America, and they really don't. Let's look at, see if we can look at some of these quotes from Roger Nash. Here's one that he says, "I would say that social work began in my mind in the Unitarian Church when I was 10 or 12 years old, and I started to do things that I thought would help other people." And of course, communism and Unitarianism, those kinds of things do not help other people. They put people into bondage is what they do. And here's another one. "I cannot consistently with self-respect do other than I have, namely, to deliberately violate an act which seems to me to be a denial of everything which ideally and in practice I hold sacred." Period. Unquote. And here's another one. "The rule of law in place of force, always basic to my thinking, now takes on a new relevance in a world where if war is to go, only law can replace it." Here's another one where he says, quote, "I am for socialism, disarmament, and ultimately for abolishing the state itself. I seek the social ownership of property, the abolition of property class, and the sole control of those who produce wealth. Communism is the goal." Unquote. So it's not hard to see that the thing that communism does, the thing that progressivism does, All these are just different names. You can kind of look at it like this. The very beginning is democracy. And when you have democracy, that's what Karl Marx wanted. He said the first thing you do when you want to turn a country around to communism, the first thing you do is you make that country a democracy. And we constantly have people in our country saying that we live under a democracy, and we do not live under a democracy. Never forget about a democracy. Our founding fathers hated democracy. They did not want democracy. Karl Marx said, if you want communism, you need to change a country to a democracy. So who would you rather follow, our founding fathers, or would you rather follow the ways of Karl Marx? And so we need to be very careful in who we follow. And that's why it's very important that we learn the things that we're learning. Some of these things seem to take a long time, and some of these things seem to be sometimes on the borderline of boring. But I'll tell you what, by the time you learn these things, it is much easier to understand. And then when you throw in, too, what Rush Limbaugh says about follow the money, it's very easy to understand. When you have people who are atheistic and communistic, well, let's go back to our democracy. That's the first step. Get a country to become a democracy. Then the next step is to become socialist. And you want to have people doing things where the government gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And the bigger the government is, the less freedom that we have. The bigger the government is, the less that we have to talk about getting things done. You know, we have that expression, you can't fight City Hall. Well, yes, you can. But the higher government goes, the harder it is to fight. And if you have a one-world government, it's practically impossible. Because as you get into communism, communism kind of runs itself. And you really don't have people who are running communism. You have the system running it. And so there are people at the bottom who are trying to scratch their way to the top. Whereas if we have a republic, then that republic allows people to have freedom. And so republicanism, the principles of republicanism will come from the Bible. We're going to study, and we've already gone through a lot of scripture at the beginning of our program to show how that republicanism, that the principles come from the Bible. And so we need to follow these things. If you take down these notes and follow these different books and follow these different people that I'm telling you about, then when it comes time to vote for someone, you don't have much of a problem. Now, what about when you get to socialism? Where do you go from there? Well, you can go into a lot of different directions. It's all controlling people. And so when you're controlling people, you can call it by a lot of different names. You can call it communism, Islamism. You can call it Nazism. You can call it Nazism. There are different names that you can call it by. And, you know, some of the names are even projected out there, some of them that we haven't even heard about. Fascism is something that we've heard about. There are just different kinds of communism, different kinds of control of people. And so what we want to do is to help you to learn these and help you to understand them. It was mentioned in this reading about the ACLU, a name that was mentioned was the father of modern education, John Dewey. John Dewey is considered the father of modern education in America. And it's an amazing thing that the one thing that he wants to do in public education, in government education, the one thing he wants to do is to get the kids so that they groupthink. And he said that he wants to take away the individual traits from school-age kids. He wants them to go from thinking individual traits, thinking for themselves, and going straight to groupthink. And when you start doing groupthink, you're losing all kinds of things. We have a man in our church at Victory Baptist Church in North Fort Myers who was born and raised in China. And he said that answers to questions are not accepted unless those answers are exactly the way that that the teachers want. So you have to say those answers just in a certain way. You can't deviate and think for yourself. So comes the end of today's message. We appreciate so much that you spent time to be with us. If you enjoy our program, would you please take time to send us any questions you might have, along with a love offering of any amount? And if you send at least $25, we will send you a 92-page book, When Good Men Do Nothing, Who Will Speak? Our address is The Patriot, 1776, at 14505 Nathan Hale Lane, North Fort Myers, Florida, 33917. Again, The Patriot, 1776. The address is 14505 Nathan Hale Lane, North Fort Myers, Florida, 33917. Talk to you again next time. Goodbye now.